Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. My absolute pleasure to be with you on this Sunday morning. On today's program, we've got veterans' voices, and later in the show, you'll hear about a benefit coming to the Dayton Steam Plant to honor the many volunteers who helped recovery efforts following the Memorial Day tornadoes that tore through the Miami Valley. Up first, our second installment of Reentry Stories, conversations between people who were once in prison. When they return to the community, they often have trouble finding jobs, housing, education, and mental health services. All the people in our series have taken part in Sinclair Community College's Advanced Job Training Program or the Dayton Collaboratory's X Factor Initiative. Today we meet Keon Jackson, who went through the Sinclair program, and his wife Nikita. They met while Keon was in prison, and Nikita was a student at Central State. Today, Keon works as a service technician and writes. Nikita is a social worker who sometimes works with the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, or ODRC, and together they've started a business of their own. Keon and Nikita were interviewed by Reentry Stories producer Mary Evans.
I'm Keon Jackson. I'm currently working as a service technician for a durable medical equipment company, new business owner of a cleaning company called Ohio Bride and Broom Cleaning Crew, along with my wife. We just started it just roughly a month ago, and things are going pretty well. And I'm also an upcoming author, planning to make a major book announcement this month.
So you were incarcerated for a lengthy part of time. Can you kind of like take me through that process of how it was when you waited to be able to be eligible to enroll in Sinclair?
Yeah, it was tough for me initially going in with a 16-year, 9-month sentence, and you have to be down to 5 years to attend college.
You mentioned your wife. You are a student at Central State, and there's someone that's reaching out to you from inside. What was your initial feelings and thoughts about that? Were you kind of nervous, scared, or describe that whole process?
All right. So it wasn't a nervous situation because we knew each other's family. So I wasn't scared, but I was a little bit leery when he called me because I wanted to make sure I wasn't being like exploited. The first thing I thought was like, okay, you need money. And I was like, okay, I'm a college student. So I just kind of put everything out, you know, when we first met, you know, all the things that I didn't have so that he wouldn't ask. But then he really just wanted my support. And I realized that even to this day, like most people that's incarcerated, sometimes they just need a support person, someone to talk to, someone to like normalize them. So I work a little bit, not directly with ODRC, but I have had some connections in working with ODRC in the past. And I did think at one moment I wanted to look into maybe being a case manager because, you know, being connected to Keon, it's like we learn about some of the things that a lot of the inmates aren't getting. And me as being a social worker and knowing the different roles, I understand that some of the things that they should be getting, like you asked him, how was he prepared coming home? I just felt like he did all the legwork on his own.
Where do you see yourself in like 5 years with the Ohio Bride and Broom Company and just everything else?
My ultimate ambition, of course, lies in me being a best-selling author. 5 years, I see myself being that. Also, I want Ohio Bride and Broom Cleaning Crew to be, you know, a household name in Ohio with pristine image, reputation, high-quality customer service. One thing you touched on, which I'm grateful for, even though it was kind of bittersweet in the beginning, as far as not being able to attend college those first 12 years of my incarceration, I wouldn't have thought outside the box had not I had those 12 years to sit and be creative and let these ideas and bubbles just keep popping and popping.
That was returned citizen Keon Jackson with his wife, Nikita Jackson. The Reentry Stories series is produced by Mary Evans and is a collaboration between WISO, Sinclair Community College, and the Dayton Collaboratory. Funding support comes from Sinclair and the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices. To hear an extended version of this interview, subscribe to the Reentry Stories podcast at WISO.org or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WISO Weekend. Our series called Veterans Voices resumed on WISO this week, and today we meet Air Force veteran Lonnie Franks from Dayton, who returned from his military service in Vietnam with a changed attitude. Franks talked with his daughter, Judy Atlog, about his decision to go to war in Vietnam and then later in life to promote peace in Dayton.
Dad, I know you joined the military way back when Vietnam was still a thing. I'd be interested in knowing a little bit of background leading up to that choice to join the military.
Sure. I had heard a speech from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and very moving speech talking about how people were being duped. And he was very anti-war. And so my father was very angry with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And so I didn't know what was going on in Vietnam. So I did join so I could figure out what was going on in Vietnam.
What was your decision?
About?
Like your dad not agreeing with Martin Luther King Jr. and?
Well, so after 2 years in Southeast Asia, it was pretty obvious to me that our reasons for being there, how we got in, how we stayed there, the level of troops that were engaged, it was pretty much the American people were being lied to. The troops were being lied to.
So they had their own agenda, which is true for most governments in most situations, correct?
Which happens in government, people thinking they know better than us.
So my thought process is leading me to your service with the Peace Museum here in Dayton, which is the only brick-and-mortar peace museum in the United States. Is that correct?
The Dayton International Peace Museum is, I believe, the only brick-and-mortar peace museum in the United States. There are 60 in Japan. I believe
way ahead of us.
There are 432 military museums.
In the United States.
In the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
A very nice museum, the U.S. Air Force Museum here
in Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
which is a good museum. But I do think that where your heart is, your money goes. Where your money goes, you build structures and organizations. So there's probably about 300 people here in Dayton, maybe 350, that really work hard at the Peace Museum and support the Peace Museum. I support the Peace Museum because I really do believe that children in particular, but also adults, need to every day think about nonviolence as a means of achieving good ends and for themselves and society. So I like the Peace Museum. I work hard for the Peace Museum.
It seems like your life has come sort of full circle in that part of your reason for joining the military had to do with seeing whether your dad was right or Martin Luther King was right. And now
what was the truth?
You, unlike most people, probably went out into the world to discover that for yourself. Do you feel like you're done discovering?
Oh, I hope not. No.
Okay. So I know you, and I know that you have the four L's of your philosophy of life. Can you share those with us?
Live, love,
learn,
leave a legacy.
So on an ending note, what is your legacy? How do you see yourself leaving that legacy to the future of our world?
I think the Peace Museum here in Dayton is a nice legacy.
I agree with you. And you have seven beautiful grandchildren who've all been through there and would attest to that.
I do have seven beautiful grandchildren.
We really appreciate that and love you so much.
Thank you.
That was Air Force veteran Lonnie Franks talking with his daughter, Judy Atlog. Their conversation took place at WYSO as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative, which visited the Miami Valley last summer. Veterans Voices on WYSO is presented by WrightPat Credit Union with additional support from CareSource. This story was edited by Will Davis and created at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO.
How can I know what I think all of the time when I haven't had time to think and sort my scattered mind? How can I do what is right all of the time when what is right shifts and disrupts my paradigm?
Well, on Thursday, November 21st, local singer-songwriter Kevin Hyder will bring his full band, The Honest Stand, to the Steam Plant in downtown Dayton for a concert to benefit relief efforts still underway from the Memorial Day tornadoes that cut through the Miami Valley. Additional funds for tornado relief will be accepted at the door by St. Vincent de Paul Society of Dayton, one of the organizations that make up the Miami Valley Long-Term Recovery Operations Group, a coalition of more than 20 local nonprofits and religious outfits that formed in the weeks following the tornadoes. St. Vincent Dayton Executive Director Michael Vandenberg serves as chair of that group. He told us this week that roughly 300 families affected by the tornadoes still face housing, transportation, and other challenges. Michael and Kevin were both guests on Kaleidoscope with Juliet Fromholtz this week to talk about the upcoming event, the mission of St. Vincent, and Hyder's latest project.
Kevin Hyder, welcome back.
Thank you.
It's been a little while. What have you been up to musically?
Oh, my gosh. Well, so recently, about a month, not quite a month ago, October 15th, I released a new album. None of them are originals, though. It's an all-covers album. So I recorded and released a Springsteen tribute album.
Which I love. I'm always curious, when an artist makes a decision to do something like that, how are you thinking about honoring what you love about the original work, but also putting your own mark on it or making it your own or something special?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've been a Springsteen fan for a while, technically a late bloomer. I didn't really get into him until I was in my mid-20s. But once I got in, I kind of dove in pretty deep, pretty fast. And so for a lot of Springsteen fans, his Nebraska album is kind of iconic because it was never really supposed to be an album. There were just demos that he recorded in his bedroom in New Jersey. Couldn't, you know, record them with the full band in a way that he felt comfortable releasing. Like, he just couldn't get the right feel that he wanted for the song. So then he decided to just release the demo tapes as an album, which is kind of unheard of, you know. And so in a sense, it's like, you know, think of your favorite musician. You know, if you had the chance to see them in a stadium with 50,000 fans screaming and singing along, or kind of go over to their house and just watch them play new songs and work them out, you know, unfinished, unpolished in their living room or in their bedroom. You know, that's what listening to Nebraska is. You know, and he was at that level. He had started selling out arenas and stadiums. So that album has always kind of held a special place for me and for a lot of Springsteen fans. So what I decided to do is kind of my way of paying tribute is I picked 10 Springsteen songs from 9 different records, and I recorded them all in that style of Nebraska.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so he recorded them in his bedroom in New Jersey, and I actually just spent a couple longer nights recording these, my acoustic arrangements of them in my old bedroom at my parents' house here in Dayton.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So that's why I called it Ohio, because I recorded it here. And the first track is about Youngstown, is his song Youngstown. So.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah. So it's a unique.
Yeah. Tribute. Yeah. I love that. And to hear some of those songs, you know, acoustically that we aren't used to hearing, that we're used to hearing very big, fleshed out rock and roll songs. Oh, how fun.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, if you're familiar with The Rising, which is the album he put out after 9/11, there's such a feeling of joy on a lot of the songs, and they're really full. And, you know, some of them are kind of like joyful anthems, that the title track in particular, The Rising. And my version of it could not be any more different than the one that he released as a radio single. It's just there's like a harmonica that is kind of longing and hopeful that comes in very sporadically, and it's just totally. I slowed it down. It's super mellow. Like where his is kind of joyful and hopeful and triumphant, mine is like I think plays more like a desperate prayer to come out of this.
So, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Do you find that when you go through this process of taking somebody else's songs and reinterpreting them and you know, doing such a kind of highly, I'm hesitant to say highly stylized because it's quite the opposite, but, you know, highly conceptualized version of an album, does that then influence the way that you're writing your own songs and making your own music going through that process?
I don't know. To be honest with you, maybe this won't make sense. If you flip that around, this might have more been born from me starting to write songs to write more songs in the style of the way that I recorded, arranged and recorded the Springsteen songs. Did that make any sense?
Yeah. So this, out of this project, was born kind of a new way that you're writing and recording your own work then.
No, that's not what I meant to say.
Oh, the flip.
Yeah.
Flip. Oh,
that was,
see, I got it backwards.
That's okay. It was my fault.
I got it all.
It was a jumbled thought in my head and it didn't straighten itself out coming out of my mouth. So, I think the way that I arrange some of his songs and many of them, how different they are from the recordings that he put out, I think I had already started to write a little more and then kind of took the style that I was writing in and applied them to these arrangements.
Oh, I see.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely,
okay,
yes.
That's what I meant to say the first time.
Yeah, so. I had it all crisscrossed.
Right.
Interesting. And so some of the material you're playing for us tonight is new material.
Yeah.
Are you working toward a new album of your own originals?
Yes. Always.
Always the marathon.
Always. It's always a marathon. Yeah. It's tough. I can be kind of selective about what I want to put out. And I'll go through seasons of, you know, not writing very much, and then I'll write a whole bunch. My writing has always come and gone in waves, and it gets to the point where I start to think about recording something, and then I write a whole bunch more, and it throws everything off. So I need to just bite the bullet and do it. But yeah, it's always a tough thing,
yeah,
to like trying to set, especially for indie artists, to kind of have the capital saved and set aside in conjunction with
the money
doing
doesn't keep
else.
Up with the writing.
Correct.
Well, in the most immediate future, you're preparing for a really awesome show at the Steam Plant on November 21st.
Yes.
That's a Thursday. Tell us a little bit about it, and I want to introduce our other guest as well.
Yeah. Michael Vandenberg is kind of the mastermind behind the whole thing. If you don't know Michael Vandenberg, people listening, you'll meet him here momentarily. He runs the St. Vincent de Paul homeless shelters here in the Dayton area. And I don't remember how exactly we got to know each other. It might have been after a show, a concert that I helped host in the area or something like that. But in any case, we've just kind of had a friendship and relationship grow over the years, and he's had me come and play for some of their different events that St. Vincent de Paul has done. And he asked me to kind of help play for – it's more of a private affair, like a thank you dinner for volunteers of tornado relief. And, you know, he said, if you want to have a full band in here, that'd be cool. And I've still never done a full band show here in Dayton before. So because I told him, like, look, if we've already got the band, we already got the venue, let's just do a doubleheader. Like after the after the private thing is over, open the doors to the public and you've already got us. We're cool to rock all night and, you know, open the doors to the public and maybe try and get some donations and whatnot for tornado relief and really all the work that they do at St. Vincent, which is amazing. Like I write songs about the problems of the world. Michael like actually helps to solve them. So
well, I think that's a perfect way to bring Michael into the conversation. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So for those that may be unfamiliar with St. Vincent de Paul or may have heard the name but not really know what you do, tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing here in our community.
Well, we've been in the community for really over 80 years, very quietly, in neighborhoods, accompanying individuals in need. We focus on keeping people stable in their homes, and we really just accentuate particularly clothing, food, and shelter. And we've been doing that quietly for decades now. And of course, when the tornadoes hit, and they hit disproportionately neighborhoods that are generally in need when there aren't tornadoes around, that stirred up a lot more activity that has continued since. So we have the folks who have been affected directly by the storms. And then also in those neighborhoods, now that we're better, even better known to individuals that are in need. And so, as Kevin mentioned, we also happen to run the emergency shelters in Montgomery County. And this is our busy time of year. We have about 500 people in shelter every night, including around 100 children.
I think Kevin will agree with me as a songwriter and a writer, you know, words have meaning, and the choice of the word accompany individuals with need really strikes me. Talk a little more about that, because I know preserving dignity and humanity is very much a part of the mission of the work that you do.
Yeah, so the mission really focuses on that individual accompaniment, but our purpose is a Christian purpose. We've been around for about 200 years. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul was founded in Paris and very quickly spread to the United States. And we have a very strong presence in the Midwest, particularly in Ohio. So in the Cincinnati area and the Dayton area, we've had what we call Vincentians, who are our volunteers that are members of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. We've been around, as I said, for 80 years, actually in the Cincinnati area, closer to 100 years. And we've been sort of the fabric of the community in the neighborhood since then. But our purpose is a Christian purpose. We do it because we feel called by our faith to do it. It's not from a proselytization point of view, but we do feel called to serve. And we're particularly focused on not having any barriers, that we've always served people as well as we can without having any barriers to. So, for example, people can come to our emergency shelters, you know, whether they're sober or not. Mm-hmm. We have people with us every night who suffer greatly from mental health issues, particularly since the state hospitals closed recently. We see more people that are affected by mental health issues. Drug addiction is common, as people who live in the Dayton area would know, in our area. And so we serve everybody, and we're a big tent, and we're here to affirm everyone's humanity. Kevin's very generous in what he said, but one of the things that sticks out in my mind is he started coming to our shelters annually on Christmas Day to play for our guests. And at one point in particular, he actually gave up his guitar to one of our guests so that he could play himself, and that was just a tremendous gift. So that idea of that personal accompaniment, and that it's not just about what we can give, but it's how we can be in a relationship mm-hmm. with the people that we're accompanying, that it really is a two-way thing. It's and that friction of accompanying one another, it's not just about us being present to the other, but it's us being willing to be vulnerable to be in a relationship with them.
For both of you, kind of coming at this from two different sides of this or perspectives of this, we talk a lot on this show about the ability of art to do good in the community, of art and music to not just be beautiful in and of itself, but to serve and to benefit. And the Dayton community is kind of known for, especially our music community, being very generous with their time and their talent. From both of your perspectives as performer and as someone who is in service to our community, what's your reflection on that, about art giving back to our community, especially in a year when our community has been hurting quite a bit?
Well, I'm continually amazed at the fabric of our community. And as you noted, the artistic fabric in particular is something that gives us character. And when we come together, that's how we kind of shout that positive message of how we want to share in that community and that expression. You know, Kevin's generosity in being engaged with us, not just when there's a disaster and not just, you know, responding to this request that we celebrate all the tornado relief workers, but in the blue sky environment as well as the gray sky environment. That sort of willingness to engage is just tremendous. And honestly, I have to say there's a lot more work that I can do to engage the creative and artistic community with our regular guests in shelter, but also the thousands of people that we serve in their own homes. And so we benefit greatly from the hundreds of volunteers who regularly engage with us, who bring their own gifts to the homes of people who have trouble staying stable in their homes. Mm-hmm. And there are just countless stories. So a lot of times it's not so much group activities as it is one-on-one, but people are bringing their individual gifts to that when they volunteer with us.
You can check out Kevin with a full band. It'll be Kevin Hyder and the Honest Stand on Thursday, November 21st at the Steam Plant in downtown Dayton. Proceeds for this show, which is a kind of come as you will, give what you can situation, will benefit St. Vincent de Paul's good work in our community. Thank you so much, Kevin and Michael, for being here and sharing this all with us.
Thank you so much.
To keep out the huddled masses, the tired and the poor, where the homeless long for shelter from the chaos of the squalls. How can I raise the flag?
Kevin Hyder and Michael Vanderberg, our guests on Kaleidoscope earlier this week. You can find out more about the November 21st benefit on Facebook at Concert for Tornado Relief with Kevin Hyder and The Honest Stand. You can also donate directly to the cause at stvincentdayton.org/howtodonate.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the second week of late fall. It's the third week of the Sleeping Frog Moon, and it's the fourth week, the final week of the Sun in Scorpio. Global climate projections are not promising for the decades ahead. And in the region in which I live in the lower Midwest, it's likely that by 2030, summers will be considerably warmer and drier. Springs a bit earlier and wetter. Autumns and winters milder. Tornadoes may become more frequent as Tornado Alley moves east from Oklahoma. Other changes might be expected, and they will be due not only to weather events, but also to cumulative habitat destruction and pollution. Studies suggest that it is likely that the insect population will continue to fall rapidly, and the number of bird species will probably decline perhaps as much as 50%. By 2030. There may be a sudden increase in nights without fireflies or crickets, a silent spring and summer in which robins and song sparrows and cardinals may no longer greet the dawn, and these would also be warnings of even more drastic transformations to come. On the other hand, while it may not be possible to reverse the global climatic momentum, individual and community efforts can help to keep the natural environment more stable. Among the many things that could be done include an increase in planting of trees and shrubs and flowers, the creation of ponds for aquaculture and for nurturing wildlife, the curtailment of pesticide and herbicide use by increasing organic agriculture. That list, of course, is endless. In this struggle for survival, however, each person and each place of compassion matters. An oasis of intent and effort is a force of resistance. And such resistance becomes more precious the greater the odds that press against it. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the third week of late fall. In the meantime, plant a tree or plant anything. Resist.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
I'm Jerry Kenney. That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, building a more informed community with independent news and storytelling. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up now on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.